Okay, so let's see. So, well, first of all, let me welcome everybody to this last DPW seminar. And today our speaker is Dr. Braulio Brunot, who, as you know, graduated very recently here from Carnegie Mellon. I had the pleasure of being his PhD advisor. And Braulio basically did his PhD on a project that was a collaboration with Dow Chemical, so it was joint work with John Wasik, with Satya Amaran, Scott Berry, and at the beginning also with Matt Bassett. And let me just tell you very briefly something about Braulio's background. So he did his undergraduate degree in Santiago, Chile, at the University of Chile, where he did both chemical engineering and bioengineering. He graduated in 2008, and then he actually joined the industry. At the time, it was called Monsanto. I think technically it's now Bayer Crop Science. And there he worked for until 2011. And in various capacities, he did production research analysis, continuous improvement, and then project and maintenance engineer. He then came again here to Carnegie Mellon, and he worked, especially I would say, largely in the area of supply chain optimization. And I think a big emphasis of this work has to do with multi-level decision making. I should also mention that his work actually led to a total of 8 different publications. Some of them had to do with integrating planning and inventory or integrating discrete transportation cost again with supply chain planning. But I think the main idea of today's presentation, which in a way, many ways kind of summarizes very nicely the work that Braulio did for his PhD, is related again with the whole idea of multi-level supply chain optimization. And it's basically the idea of trying to analyze the type of problems that arise, how you can model them. And actually also, Braulio will describe some of the tools that he developed in order to address this problems. And sorry, I also failed to mention, so Braulio just joined recently Johnson & Johnson, where he's in the data science analytics group. Okay, so without any further ado, let me then introduce Braulio, and we look forward to your presentation, Braulio. It's all yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Ignacio. So thank you for having me today in this seminar. It's my second time presenting to this audience, and I really like it. So as Ignacio said, I moved to Johnson & Johnson recently, and I'm part of the supply chain digital analytics team. We are a big group, and we do supply chain. We also do machine learning. We do a little bit of everything related to analytics. And I want to talk a little bit about topics related to my thesis.
By the way, can I just remind everybody to mute their phones just to make don't hear any strange noises, please? Yeah, probably. Please go ahead. Okay.
Okay. So we're interested in supply chain, and then supply chain, we move the product from the supplier to raw materials, to all the transformations, until to reach the customer. And so we have a lot of decisions in this chain. The objective here is that we need to make complex decisions to provide finished goods to the customer in the right amount, at the right time, and with the required quality. And that seems simple if put it in two lines, but it is actually very complex, and we all know that there are many decisions involved in all these steps. We also know that these decisions are organized hierarchically, but we have different time scales, we have different scopes, and we have different people here with conflicting objectives. And our goal here in this group is in enterprise bio-optimization has always been to try to optimize the whole thing or the complete the complete pyramid that I just showed, And we call it enterprise-wide optimization in this group. Since the very famous paper from Ignacio in 2005 that I always cite whenever I write a new paper. And also we know it in business, like about end-to-end optimization. So in our mind, we're trying to achieve something like this, in which we have a coordinated process with all the decision makers working towards a common goal, and it's very clear what are the right decisions to make. But reality is a little more complicated than that, because we have a lot of things going on and a lot of individual decision making happening with different objectives and not always coordinated. So the challenges that we have here are, first, we have the data challenge, that we have data all over the place in different systems, but there's no straightforward way to combine all those data. It's incomplete, it's messy. So in order to optimize the whole thing, we need to put the data together. So the plan that is usually taken to solve this challenge is to try to put everyone in the same system or try to standardize the data and then optimize. So my question to you is this like a good plan?
No.
Maybe not. And the second challenge is that we have different decision makers, and all of them have different objectives. And we have created systems in which we assign KPIs to each person, and that person needs to just try to keep their KPIs as far as possible to make sure that the results be good. But by doing this, we have created barriers to really resolve the trade-offs that are there. So sometimes you have two decision makers that are connected, and the maximization of one KPI is a trade-off with another one. So in a way, a systematic way to address those and make sure that each decision maker understands that sometimes your KPI needs to go down for the greater good of the business. And that's difficult to achieve in the way we have organized our decision-making system. And the third challenge that I want to mention is systems, right? We have also, we're using different things to make our decisions, many spreadsheets all over the place. SAP systems or ERP or custom software. But one message here is that as long as we have the inputs and outputs clearly connected, the system itself doesn't matter much. And we're going to see that with a framework that I'm going to present next. So as I said, we have the decision network organized. We have all the decisions connected. And we call that the decision network, in which each node represents an individualized decision maker with a different scope. And we need to address what is the model that's happening in that node, what is the decision, what are the inputs, what are the outputs, and how are those connected to the next decision makers in the network. So that's all that we need to do. The key questions here is, well, for each node is what is the right model, and that means that every time we start operating with a specified part of the business, we try to solve that specific problem in that scope, and we try to make sure that we find the best model for that particular decision maker. And then the second question is, now that we have these models, and how do we coordinate all of them? And that's probably more challenging. So I'm going to talk a little bit about integration on trying to exemplify the use of this framework. We're going to focus today in the integration of planning and scheduling and show you how can this modeling approach be put in practice to integrate different decision levels. So the title of this work is Novel Approaches for the Integration of Planning and Scheduling, and we have a paper submitted to Industrial and Engineering Chemistry Research, so it should be published soon. So that's what we're going to focus. We're going to focus on the integration of the tactical and operational levels, meaning in supply chain lingo, planning and scheduling. So we, people who have tried this, we know that it's very challenging to integrate these two decision levels, mainly because we have a large time scale difference. So we make decisions, plan decisions in weeks or even months, but for scheduling, we're talking about hours. So we want to know what happens every hour. So the first approach that people take to solve this problem is to basically take the scaling horizon and expand it to match the planning horizon. So we end up with very, very large models that we cannot solve. And then they have this, so that's the first issue. And the second issue is that in order to do this, we have to extrapolate a lot of information. So we only have information for the first part, but then we need to assume or extrapolate a lot of information, and that leads to a lot of uncertainty in our data, and that diminishes the quality of our solution. Okay? So that's one thing that we want to tackle. And so in other cases, we're going to have the models already put together in this case. Maybe we have a planning model that has a scope of 3 or 4 months, and then we have a scheduling model that is working already for 2 weeks. So we see if we can integrate those without having the need to expand the planning model. So the second assumption that we usually do is that the communication happens through production and inventory targets. So the planner optimizes and then passes a target of inventory and production to the scheduler, and the scheduler tries to follow as much as possible. An alternative that we want to propose with this work is to allow them to communicate through inventory policy. So the planner optimizes the policy, gives the policy parameters to the scheduler. So the goal of this project was to investigate the impact of on iterative planning and scaling of the length of the scaling horizon and this communication through inventory policy. And we want to validate this using simulations. The simulation framework, basically, the idea here is to evaluate not an output of the model and say, well, how does it behave? Here we want to evaluate the decision making itself. When we do simulation, we usually have some kind of simple policies that allows us to represent the way we would make decisions. But since I told you that this is a very complex decision making process, we're going to put our optimization model inside the simulation. So that means that we're going to have decision agents that are actually going to run optimization models to obtain the decision. So we're going to simulate 1 year of production with using hourly events. I'm going to consider that we have uncertainty in the forecast and the pickup times and also equipment breakdowns happening. So the planning model is an MILP with inventory policy with a time grid of 1 week and a planning horizon of 1 month and a look ahead of 1 month. So that means that I'm running a model for 2 months of horizon, but I'm fixing the decisions for the first month. And for the scheduling, we're going to use the UOPS framework, which is a very nice general framework for batch scheduling. We're going to consider a time grid of 4 hours, and our fixed horizon is going to be 1 week. But then the look ahead, we're going to be varying from 1 to 7 weeks. So when we have 7 weeks of look ahead horizon, we're going to have the same total horizon for the planning and the scheduling, 8 weeks.
So, question. Yeah. So. when I have seen this process here, I noticed that for the planning model, they produce a set of requests, but not necessarily. So the work of the scheduler is sometimes they have to pick what is going to produce every week, because whatever the planning model is giving them doesn't satisfy capacity constraints. Right? So most of the time, the schedule is facing the challenge of picking what is doing first or second because of the capacity. And many times, there are going to be even things that they cannot even produce because they don't have
capacity. Right. So the question here is that sometimes the planner, instead of the way that the target comes, is in a set of requirements that then the scheduler needs to decide which ones should he meet or prioritize to make sure that the scheduler meets the requirements. And that's something that we are considering here, because the constraints that are linking the planning and the scheduling model are actually soft constraints. That means that the scheduler can always do something different to what the planner says. Because that's a reality. You can always, I'm the planner and I'm telling you something, you can always ignore me or do something different if you deem that better. And that's basically covering the situation that you're describing. So I think that's...
And the plan is, when you start the presentation, you put the whole supply chain with multi channels. So what the planning model is doing is also looking the entire supply chain or just one echelon ahead?
No, this case is limited. This one is meant to be multi-site, just looking one three sites of the warehouses. But okay. It's a regional planner, we say.
Okay.
So, and the implementation here is in a plasma graph that allows us to represent exactly what I have here, in which I have models in different nodes and I have linking constraints. And the implementation was done in Julia programming language and with our package for decomposition for plasma algorithms, which I'm going to talk at the end of this video. Here's the workflow of the simulation. So first, every month, the demand planner will update the forecast for the next 8 weeks. Then, every week, the logistics planner will arrange all the pickups that are coming to see what are the short-term requirements. And then we have that, and every month we have an agent that is the tactical planner and scheduler combined, so solving the combined model. It's going to solve the entire network that we have here, and prescribe both the target and also the schedule for the short term. And then every week, or when it's not the end of the month, for example, we will run only a scheduling model that's going to update the schedule, but keeping fixed everything that's coming from the test. We have the operator, which is actually going to execute the production. And also, we have a maintenance agent that's going to fix any breakdowns in stuff. So, the planning model is a multi-echelon planning model when we have these basic constraints to satisfy demand and also the inventory balance constraint. But we have a block of constraints that allows us to optimize an SS inventory policy. And also the second term in the first constraint, the term RD, allows the planner to deviate some demand to a third party manufacturing, for example. And that we publish this formulation in that reference right there. And the scheduling model, this is what we're representing, but we're using the Duos formulation. This is an extension of the classical condition example, and we also have a time-based backlog penalty. So basically, you have to meet things as soon as as close as possible to their due date. And then I want to take a little time to say, to ask the question, why do we actually care about integrating all these processes? We might think that they're not very connected and they work independently well enough, but let's see how we can investigate this question through using the simulation framework. So we're going to take the planner and the scheduler, which communicate, the planner gives targets and the scheduler gives dual information, and that we're going to represent it with a vendor decomposition process. And in our implementation, we can also use class decomposition, and we use some specialized cuts to make this solution better. But the idea here is that we're going to investigate the impact on the intensity of the communications measured in number of iterations what we do in this class. So first, we do one pass, which is the usual way, no iteration. Or then maybe we're going to do five iterations with this, a few conversations back and forth. You know, this doesn't work. Okay, let me fix this. And then we're going to do an infinite number of iterations, or basically iterate until we converge, until we agree, which is something that in practice doesn't happen. It can only happen with a decision system like Stackhouse. So, in the first case, one iteration, basically the planner prescribes something and the scheduler agrees because he doesn't have an option, just receives what the planner gives him. But when the scheduler doesn't have the right tools, it doesn't even have the capacity to or the ability to evaluate if the request that's coming from the planner is actually satisfiable or not. So price is best, and that's what I've seen the most. Then we have a scheduler that has a better set of tools. Maybe he can know that the proposal is not feasible and he can negotiate back. But then after a few iterations, well, they just finish talking and they have to agree on something. Because when you do manual iterations, you can only do only a few. But then when you have a system, a decision support system in practice in place, that allows you to integrate planning and scheduling, the system can suggest something. And then they can agree, or they can maybe ask something different from the system. So a lot of what if scenarios and change constraints, change parameters, until they're comfortable with the decision that the system is proposing. So, as expected, as the number of iterations increase, the profit increases, and also the backlog decreases. So there is benefit of integrating these processes, and we measure it through our simulation framework. Now let's look at the second issue, the effect of the look-ahead horizon, or basically trying to shrink the optimization horizon for the scheduling.
I didn't get the conclusion. Why do you say that is benefit? So, did you compare the case where you don't?
So first case, one iteration means I tell you what to do, you say okay, right? And that bars are measured through a simulation. So the profit and the backlog are obtained from the simulation.
Okay, but then if I tell you everything that you need to produce, and then you make your 2 year schedule, I also have another way of comparison, so no?
Yeah, but the idea is that we can agree. For example, if I tell you have to make 1,000, and then you just take that and then end up making 600, then the other 400, we have a problem with that because I thought you were going to do it and you didn't do it. Then, but if you told me in advance, you know what, I cannot do 1,000, then I can take a timely action to send that to another plan, just the
because you have got a $62.
Yeah, so I can take other actions if you tell me right away. So that's what's represented here. And then, so we want to integrate these two processes, but we want to make the scaling horizon shorter. And to do that, we're going to scale the objective functions based on the length of the horizon. So small h is the horizon for the scaling, and big H is the scaling for the horizon for the planning. And we do the scaling because when we're adding both objective functions, we're actually having a trade-off there, so the trade-off needs to be maintained to maintain the solution. And so the scenarios that we're going to see are, well, first, the beta, full horizon for both, then look ahead of 1 week, so 2 weeks for scaling, then 4 weeks of scaling, and finally 4 weeks of scaling, but having a relaxation of the rest, the other 4 weeks. So basically the relaxation is here that is a continuous relaxation in which every binary variable that happens after week five is relaxed to be between 0 and 1. And we have the results here in three indicators. First, the profit, the backlog, and the RH inventory. And the bars that start from LA3 and to the right, they all have the same performance. So that conclusion tells us that as long as we cover the decision horizon for the planning, we're good. And I'm going to come back to explain why. Basically, we're saying that, okay, that the bar, the figure in the right is good enough because in the planning, we are optimizing every 4 weeks. So the dark shaded part, once we make the decision, we're committed and we're not changing the decision. So if we make the decision considering the scaling for that full, that part of the horizon, we're good because if we probably we don't have the best decision for the coming week, the week 5 to 8, then we're going to adjust the decision anyway so the problem behaves well.
So one thing that I'm a little bit puzzled is that when I have been in the plants and I know that, okay, the guys take whatever it is they wanted to produce for that week. And the problem that they face is that, okay, they want to produce the schedule, but then anything happens, and sometimes something is not under their control. So, for instance, they want to start a production and didn't have the raw material. So then they have to move this job to the next week, or the machine breakdown, or the people don't show up. So it's a lot of stuff that the scheduler controls. So I don't see the benefit. Okay, I understand that when you integrate and you put two decision process together, definitely you should get more benefit because you have more flexibility to optimize. Mm-hmm. But the process that you were describing there where the people to agree, I can agree with you what I'm going to do for the next 4 weeks, but then actually do it is the issue, not the disruption that they face.
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. And the way we try to address that in this work was to embed our optimization inside the simulation. So the theory is actually exposed to breakdowns, delays, and all that you mentioned. And we're saying, okay, what if the planner will only optimize 1 month, every month, but the scheduler has the ability to optimize every week? So, and then if there's a large disruption, probably you want to reschedule right away. But we evaluate all these integrations with the disruptions that you mentioned.
Yeah, because definitely there is a sweet point where maybe if you have too much disruption, no matter what you agree, then it seems nothing's going to be satisfied.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the conclusion here is that as long as you cover the shaded green part here with the scheduling, you're going to obtain a good integrated solution. Let's go to the next part, which is the effect of the communication variable. So we have communication through target and communication through inventory policy. And the the radar plot shows the average inventory of 20 simulation runs, and the important part is that the red line, that is the policy scenario, always goes inside the black line, which we have a lower average inventory in most of the scenarios. We have a larger profit, and we see we have a overall lower average inventory. And that is because when we're passing the policy itself, instead of passing the explicit target, we're giving a little more degrees of freedom to the scanner to satisfy the demand orders, but taking care of the inventory himself. So that's the takeaway here. So if we communicate through policies, we have the opportunity to give more room for the scanner to optimize and arrive to better solutions. So some remarks about this part is that we propose a simulation framework to evaluate a decision maker that is based on an optimization model. And that is very important because I think we don't do that enough. We use simulation to evaluate the output of certain decisions, or we use simulation to understand a process, but I haven't seen or didn't see in my digital research embedding decision makers like the ones we want to use in a simulation. And the value here is to try to test our systems, decision support systems that we intend people to use, to conditions that are real as possible. So maybe using the digital twin, we can evaluate our models before rolling out to that. Second is that the communication for inventory policies leads to lower inventory and larger profit, at least in the case scenarios that we study. And finally, considering a shorter scanning does not affect the profit as long as recovering the decision horizon. And then I'm going to talk just a little bit about the tools that I use to solve this problem. And it's the idea here is to put together a set of tools to allow to coordinate these models in the decision network. And that is to apply decomposition algorithms very quickly. And I'm saying decomposition algorithms because I think that one way to represent all this exchange of information in a network is through a decomposition algorithm, such as we saw example with vendor decomposition. So basically, plasma algorithm is a Julia package that in which you generate the graph using Plasma that allows you to generate a model, a jump model, in each of the nodes, and then specify the linking constraint. From those, you can do with a single line, apply a decomposition algorithm, such as solving the whole problem in a big model, or applying a Lagrange decomposition or a Bender decomposition, and lately under development, a cross decomposition. And you obtain a solution object that gives you solution information. It's very easy to use, so it's as simple as this. Assuming that we have the planning model, and it's MP is the planning model, and SP is the scheduling model, we can create a graph, create two nodes, put the models inside the node, add edges if we're using vendor decomposition, generate the linking constraint. I'm saying that whatever is called Y in node 1, it's the same as called Y in node 2, and that's my linking constraint. And then solve with one line. So some future research directions that are coming from these ideas of the decision network are, well, first, we can do supply chain control. That means that once we have a system that is correctly modeled and we know how it's connected, we can start figuring out what part of the decision network is affected by perturbations in the outside data. Second, we can use this to model organizational structures, since we intrinsically the decision network is a representation in how decisions are organized and how people have different scopes of decision. We can find different structures that allows us to reshape our organizational structures based on models. We can also use them to model transactional processes, and we can incorporate things like reinforcement learning to use different kinds of tools. Because I said that inside each node, there's a model, but it doesn't have to be a mathematical programming model. It could be other kinds of model, or could be any system, as long as we have connected the input and output correctly. So with that, I'm going to conclude, and I hope I motivated enough that the use of a modeling approach allows us to tackle the challenges that we have in integrating different decision levels. So my recommendation is to see things in individual spaces, so try to solve this problem, but don't lose the focus on how things are connected with other decisions in the system. And I would like to finish with my favorite message, that I believe that we need to do it because our mission is not to replace our colleagues with machines, but to help them make better decisions aided by computers. And with that, I would like to finish and thank all the people who collaborated in this work and open it for your questions.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you very much, Paolo. I think we do have plenty of time for questions, so maybe we'll start with those people who are the furthest away, if they have any questions for Paolo. No questions? Okay, what about people in the room at CMU? Any questions?
I do have a question. Hi, Braulio.
Okay.
This is Yixin. So I think you mentioned that in earlier of your slides that there could be different KPIs or like measures of performance for the schedulers or the planners. But I think there's only one single objective function of your model, which is the objective function or the measure of performance for the global planner sort of thing. So are you planning to address those measures of performance for, the planners or schedulers? There are different objective functions in your model in the future, or could you just justify how you have addressed them in your model?
Well, that's a very, very good question. There's two things there. One is that you usually assign a KPI to a person, and you assign a decision scope to that person, so that basically they don't have enough awareness mm-hmm. of what's happening next door. So you only focus on maximizing your KPI and make the decisions that you are asked to do.
Right.
So and then that creates a disconnection because sometimes there are trade-offs between neighboring KPIs that are not resolve in a timely manner and actually create conflict. And also, you also mentioned that there is a big objective function that basically could take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's also not clear. So it's people are also not aware of the full objective function. So you're only aware of your piece of the objective function. And so the way to address that, I would think of trying to make some combined KPIs in which you focus on your top one, but then you also have you're also trying to put some weight to a KPI that represents the greater good of the area. Yeah, and that's it's not something that I would know how to do right away.
Yeah, I was also thinking about, you know, smart KPIs, like just try to figure out new or smarter measure of performance than the traditional ones would be, because I think people can only get hold of something that's within their reach, but not the whole picture. Yes, that's exactly what I thought. Thank you.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Any other question for Braulio? Let me ask you a question, Braulio. In your slide 23, that's where you compare the profit and the backlog in terms of the number of iterations, right? Okay, so the question is the following. So we all know that ideally the best way, if we could do it, to integrate planning and scheduling is just simply to solve the two of them simultaneously over the entire time horizon. So in other words, you would say, for example, okay, I have 1 year for planning, and typically the planning you do in periods of maybe every month or so, and then the schedule is maybe on a weekly basis, and instead of just doing maybe, let's say, 4 weeks, we extend that to the entire year, so we have 52 weeks, and in that way, there's really no need, so to speak, of communicating to some either inventory or some other. Well, there are obviously variables that are connecting them, but my main point is that theoretically that would be a truly simultaneous planning and scheduling. The problem of doing it that way is that, of course, the problem would become absolutely unmanageable because the scheduling level tends to have a lot more detail, which would make it, really unmanageable. But nevertheless, assume that we could somehow solve that problem. My question would be the following. So when you show the results for an infinite number of iterations, can we make any statement on how that solution approaches that ideal simultaneous planning and scheduling over the entire time horizon? Or if not, is there some approximation or something else that, you know, would prevent us from achieving that ideal solution of truly simultaneous planning and scheduling? I don't know if I made myself clear. If not, let me know, okay?
So I think there are two things that are different there. The first one is the horizon, and we are trying to put a shorter scheduling horizon, so we said, think maybe it's not necessary to run the entire 52 weeks, but maybe run 20 weeks or 10 weeks, and that will still give you a good solution. That was something that we tried to. And then the second thing is that each of these solutions that are not with the infinite number of iterations are basically suboptimal decisions for the same model, because it's taking the model, partitioning into two parts at least, and then running vendor situation. So if we stop before convergence, we're going to end up with a suboptimal solution. So basically, it's not that the solution will approach the full horizon, but for any horizon we consider, a lesser number of iterations will converge to a suboptimal decision.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I think, as you're saying, and I agree, obviously in the simultaneous one that I just described, the assumption would be that both planning and scheduling would have the same length of the time horizon, which of course would be absolutely impractical, to be able to do the scheduling model. But then if I understand you, from a purely theoretical point of view, there's always going to be, let's call it some approximation due to the fact that you're accounting for different time horizons, but you're trying to somehow improve as much as possible the coordination. I'm just trying to find a more or less rational, qualitative explanation for the results in slide 23.
The biggest insight of this slide in particular is that most of our decisions are made with the one iteration, the first part. And in the best case, we do a few, like the five iterations part. That means that all most of our decisions that we currently make are suboptimal. And there's opportunity to make better decisions. We put together decision support systems that allow the decision makers to obtain optimal integrated decisions.
Right. Yeah, thank you. And maybe one more. You described briefly the thing about the plasmographs. Could you give a little bit more background where that software got started and how it's reached a point where it is right now?
Oh, yes, sure. Okay, so this all started in, I guess, in 2016 or day 15, I saw a talk by the student from Victor Zahala's group in Wisconsin, and they are the ones behind Plasmo. So they created a framework to generate graphs of models, and they have those objects of the graphs, the nodes, and the linking constraints. And so at that time, I was looking to create do some work on Lagrangian decomposition. So I thought to do something general for people to be able to reuse it and extend it and everyone to improve it. So I created Plasmo algorithms as an open source package in GitHub to do an implementation of Lagrangian decomposition, which I think most of the work was done by Maria Paz Ochoa. And we did that, the product decomposition paper based on that implementation of Lagrangian decomposition. Then we continued doing an implementation of Bender's decomposition, which I did with an undergrad researcher. And we did an implementation of multi-level Bender's decomposition at the same time. And so far in the group, we have kept working. I did combining the vendors and the Lagrangian decomposition implementations. I did a multi-level graphic composition implementation, which I still haven't released. And we have kept thinking, and people like Stan Lee has been working on improving the package and adding more things. Because I think written in Julia, it's a good... It's very simple to understand, and people can implement very complex algorithms right away and use them, which decreases the time for doing research and for implementation. And many times we see different algorithms published in different papers, but the code only works for it's very complex and only works for the people who created it. So the idea was to create something that was for the community, for the both the PSC and the OR communities, to put a meeting place to put all the algorithms that are commonly used and improve them for everyone. The current state is that we are working on bringing it to the latest version of JAMP, and it's going to be implemented inside Plasmo. So people who install Plasmo will have all the access to the algorithms right away. And we're still working on as I said, more algorithms like cross decomposition and maybe dancing wolf in the future. So the idea is to have all the implementations there readily available.
Okay, thank you very much. Very good. So any last-minute questions for Braudio on its presentation to the audience? No? Okay. Well, then on that note, let me thank again Braudio very much for a very clear, very good presentation. And then we'll resume the EWO seminars next semester. Okay? Thank you very much, then. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.